Well, Bruce, here we are back together again. Well, in a studio of sorts. The last time we were together, it was the last Downtown Radio show, New Year's Eve. And now you're the first in-studio guest here in the home studio. Welcome.
Well, it's great. It's a great home studio, great new puppy, you know, a beautiful day here in Maine. And no, it's really good to be back. I have an article coming out in Portland Magazine about the show next month. And I mentioned that every day at 3:45, my internal alarm clock goes off and says, oh, and I go to punch up WZON, but I only get static.
Well, we've got a little more than static now. The podcast is out. We had a terrific response to episode one last week, and excited to roll into our first edition of Sports Lit 101. A little background for anybody who doesn't know Bruce. Well, actually, I could take a whole show summarizing Bruce is and his background as, let's see if I get it right, and in no particular order, singer, songwriter, poet, storyteller, writer, professor, coach. What else am I missing? Carpenter.
you're not missing anything, really. It's downtown's been just an important part of my life for a dozen years, and I'm glad that we're moving forward.
Well, you had this great idea a dozen years ago to talk about books. Books that were sports related, and we started doing Sports Lit 101. We have talked about hundreds of books in that time, talked to dozens of authors, and it's just been such a big part of the radio show. We wanted to continue doing it and make it part of the podcast. And as teams get ready to get spring training rolling, we've got some baseball books to talk about this week.
Yeah, we're going to have two baseball books in a row, and then we're going to have a look at Boston sports and racial attitudes, and the books just keep arriving from the presses. Syracuse just sent me some stuff yesterday. I haven't had a chance to look at, so we're back and rolling.
Absolutely. Well, what do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's talk about Doc Donnie, the Kid, and Billy Brawl, how the 1985 Mets and Yankees fought for New York's baseball soul. You know, when you think about rivalries in baseball, you think of the Dodgers and the Giants, the Cubs and the Cardinals, the Yankees and the Red Sox. They're all not only in the same league, they're in the same division. When 1985 rolls around, the mercurial George Steinbrenner is having conniption fits because the Mets are starting to do well. And in New York, you want to be the one that gets the back page, right? That's the thing. And so he launches what basically is a war against the Mets, which he doesn't win in many ways. And in 1985, you had to win your division. There was no wild card.
Right.
So the Mets and the Yankees were letting a lot of people think there might be a Subway Series. The things were the things that aligned made it look like that could happen. Part of that was the trade the Mets made for Gary Carter, which proved out to be very important.
Which was fascinating to me to read about how he was viewed by ownership in Montreal. Was it Bronfman, one of the owners, who said, whenever Gary Carter comes up to the plate, I go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't seem to have been well-liked anywhere. People thought that one place they called him Teeth because he was always smiling.
Right.
Doing commercials and stuff. But he really solidified the Mets in a lot of ways because a veteran catcher. Now, the Mets won the World Series in 1969, as we all know, and would not win again until they beat the Red Sox in 86.
Yeah.
the Yankees won in 77 and 78, but they had to wait until the late 90s, much later than the Red Sox, to add to their record number of titles. So these were teams that had not won recently. I mean, in New York, if you haven't won in 5 years, you haven't won recently. And so this is also, people need to remember, this is post-Bronx Zoo days. This is post-Gossage and Nettles and Oscar Gamble and those guys. This is a different Yankee team. And but Billy Martin keeps showing up.
Turning up like the proverbial bad penny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was hired. He only managed the Yankees four times. He was hired a fifth time, and he screwed that up before he even started that season. So but the Mets had what was really good for them. They had Davy Johnson. Yeah. Davy Johnson, as we know, was a good ball player, certainly no Hall of Fame stats, but he was a calm, easygoing guy. Maybe not so easygoing with the players, but easygoing with the press and the public. And so he's got the Mets focused on baseball. Steinbrenner's driving everybody on the Yankees out of their mind. Now, the Mets also had the advantage of some really good veterans, but also some pretty outstanding young people. And compared to the snarling and the drinking and all the fighting going on at the Yankees, it was easy for a lot of people to begin to love the Mets. Now, the Mets were also known as very hard partiers. They were just smart about not fighting with their manager. So at the time, the Mets have two of the best young players in baseball.
Yeah.
They have Dwight Gooden, who at 19 is a better pitcher than most people.
And had one of the greatest rookie seasons in the history of baseball.
Oh, absolutely. And Darryl Strawberry, who that year would miss a lot of the season with injuries, was an outstanding outfielder. When I think he won three world titles with the Yankees later on. But they had some interesting people. Besides Gooden, they had Rick Aguilera, Ron Darling, Sid Fernandez, Roger McDowell. Oof. That's pretty great pitching there. And in the bullpen, they had Jesse Orosco and some others. And they all benefited from pitching with Gary Carter calling the game. That was a huge trade for them. Now, the Yankees starting rotation, pretty solid too. Ron Guidry, talk about another guy that had a pretty amazing rookie, sensational rookie year. Dave Rigetti, Phil Niekro, Dale Murray, a bunch of others, and Joe Niekro will even join them. And then in the outfield, the various people who played outfield that year were Ricky Henderson, Ken Griffey, George Foster, Dave Winfield, and Don Baylor. So the infield had Don Mattingly and Willie Randolph, and Mattingly's one of those guys, it's like Jim Rice, you could make a case for him being in the Hall.
I saw a great conversation, you mentioned that last week. I think it was Bob Costas and Tom Verducci, right before the announcement of this year's class, were talking about overlooked first basemen, and they talked a lot about Don Mattingly and Keith Hernandez, and the fact that for a stretch of time, mid-'80s to maybe early 90s, Mattingly was as good a hitter as there was in baseball.
Yeah, and injuries did him in. And Hernandez, who will play a big role in 85 of the Mets, you know, he got tattooed because of the cocaine thing, which he was hardly the only one involved in. And the guy was clean by the time it all came out. So he's sort of like, maybe like Clemens or Bonds or somebody. He may have a long wait.
Yeah, and didn't have the offensive numbers, but widely regarded as maybe the greatest defensive first baseman of all time.
Yeah, and converted to first base. Didn't start out there.
And a heck of a broadcaster, too, that I'm not sure anybody saw coming back in the 80s.
Yeah, I didn't either. But, yeah, I really like when I hear him. Now, so from opening day to the end of September, the Yankees and the Mets are both in the pennant race. At times they're in first place, times they fall out. But the problem for a lot of it was the press jumped into this fray and they saw they were going to sell a lot of papers and they just played every little thing that happened up. When you've got Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner, there's going to be a lot of that. You know, and Steinbrenner later is going to get banned from baseball for hiring a gambler to dig up dirt on Dave Winfield. I mean, we're talking about a guy who would go to he didn't have any place he wouldn't go to win. So anyway, at the end of that soap opera season, the Yankees finished 97-64, two games out, despite a heroic last 15 days. I mean, really phenomenal effort. And the Mets 98-64 was second in wins only to the 1969 championship team. So it's a fascinating story. And what Donnelly does with the book, he does sort of go through an entire game to talk about things, but he really sets the book up so it's paced well. You're not bogged down with, well, in the fourth inning on 3-2.
But it's a reminder, too, that even without the Yankees really winning anything during that stretch of time, the talent on those two teams still made it the center of the baseball universe.
I think 15 future Hall of Famers.
Wow.
I mean, it's some number like that, but it's really close. You know, but what I like is we're seeing at that point in time baseball losing out to football. The national pastime for a long time was baseball, and it's starting to fade. A lot of people would say that they had too many teams. I don't know what the answer to that is. But you're right. The baseball world was centered in New York, and the attention was there, and people made a difference, and they cared. I mean, I was a teenager during the younger during the great Yankee runs in the 50s and 60s. But I was still paying attention to the Mets and the Yankees in 1985. I didn't live down there anymore, but I paid attention to them because it was where I grew up, you know, and it was the baseball I listened to growing up. My dad was a Yankees fan, and I liked both teams. I didn't hate the Mets, you know, but the attempt to try and make that become the rivalry, not the Yankees Red Sox, not the Mets Phillies, but to make it be that was part of the story that Donnelly tells. And you know, it's a really good book because it takes you behind the curtain, and it lets you see what was part of ruining baseball: the pressure, the extra games, the drug use, the whole nuances and new parts of free agency. The trading there was a lot more trading going on in those days. So it's really good, and you meet so many fascinating characters and learn things about people. I mean, I learned more about Billy Martin in this book than I ever knew, and I thought I knew a lot about
Billy Martin. Well, and I got a lot more respect for Davy Johnson, too. I love, and I don't want to give away a spoiler. I want people to read the book. But the great story of how Johnson responded to some comments that Rick Sutcliffe made after he got traded over to the Cubs.
Oh, yeah. Read the book just for that, if nothing else. Yeah. And for Johnson having the good sense to see that if his team was focused, they could be as good as anyone. And it was a more competitive league then. I mean, there were fewer teams, and it was just more competitive. It was tough to make it to the bigs.
Absolutely. Now, are we going to talk about the McCovey book this week or next time around?
For next time around.
Okay, because we'll tease that a little bit. Next time, we'll talk about A Giant Among Giants, The Baseball Life of Willie McCovey by Chris Haft. And you know, another guy that I always liked as a player when I was a kid, but boy, reading this book, a whole new appreciation of what he meant to people off the field as well.
Yes, and you know, he seems to be a guy that even though he and Willie Mays had some tense moments, that nobody seemed to dislike. But yeah, it's a good book.
Excellent. We'll talk about that next time. Bruce, thank you.
You are welcome, sir.
Bruce Pratt, Sports Lit 101 here on Downtown.